This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
Hello, everyone. First of all, thank you very much to the organizers for the invitation. Such a pleasure for me to speak at a CARTA symposium, mostly because I relate a lot with many of the questions on human origins discussed throughout the day so far. Despite not being an anthropologist myself, I'm actually a medical doctor by training. So you may wonder, what am I doing in this field? And don't worry, I also wonder that myself sometimes. but I guess the answer is in my family history. So I grew up in a family of anthropologists. My father, pictured right here, worked throughout Latin America and many rural areas doing field work and development projects for indigenous groups. I actually was born in one indigenous community in the southern state of Oaxaca in the Mixtec Highlands. I thought I was never interested in studying anthropology, and I went to med school. However, these topics about our origins and the realities that we live surrounded by were like the daily basis of discussions at home. I even got married to an anthropologist, so some of the work that I will be presented today is in collaboration with her as well. So I have the privilege today to lead a research lab based in Mexico City. We're mostly proud about our logo. I think it's very cool. And we have it printed in our t-shirts, also printed in the walls of the laboratory. But in terms of science, what we really are interested in is where do we come from in terms of maybe what we can call the terminal tips of this family tree, or the tree of life that we share in the human lineage, which is in the Americas. So the Americas is very well established where we come from in terms of the human evolution, has been discussed today in several talks. Indigenous peoples in the Americas derived from East Asians, roughly about 15,000 years ago. But I think in Latin America, particularly if we look at the diversity today, this gets particularly complicated recently in the past 500 years because of these intercontinental exchanges that happened, maybe not that voluntarily, but it is basically a convergence of previously diverged profiles in terms of genetics that mixed together and give rise to the diversity that we see today in Latin America. So Hispanic population clearly is a very diverse and rich community, very heterogeneous. And you can see very quickly that there's a lot of differences in terms of language and heritage. You can even see where people come from. But this is not really easy to tease apart when we look at the genetics as compared to other regions in the world. For example, if we do a principal component analysis as presented several times earlier today, we can really quickly see what are the proportions of ancestry or the proportions of where these DNAs come from in terms of the average signal that each individual can have. So in this PCR, we have reference populations that we can call either from European, African, and Native American in different colors, as you can see here, very clearly clusters. And in the intermediate values, we see Hispanic individuals that, depending on the position in PCI space, can have more or less proportions of those ancestors. However, this analysis is not informative about the specific roots of these individuals within those continental sources, whether Europeans or indigenous and so on. So because of that, we have developed, and we are many others, some methods and approaches to bioinformatically track these separately, ancestry by ancestry. So if we have an individual has a mixture of different sources, what we can do is, first of all, tease them apart, having references of how DNA would look like from homogeneous populations. Again, let's say Europeans, indigenous, and Africans. So what we eventually have, because we can do that in terms of a genome-wide average, basically repeat that analysis step by step across the genome. Let's say take different windows and then ask this piece of DNA, where is it more likely to come from in terms of the ancestors? And that's what we basically create, a map of coordinates of what is the most likely origin of each of these segments. So once we have that map, it's relatively easy bioinformatically to then to mask out that part of the genome that we don't want to analyze at that moment and then do what we call ancestry-specific analysis. So now I'm gonna show another PCA, but in this case, this is only the indigenous fraction of different Hispanic or Latino individuals across Latin America, and together with source populations, in this case, the indigenous peoples from different regions. So green dots are the reference samples. You can see here from Mexico, Colombia, Peru, you know, the rest of the Andes and so on, and the Amazon as well. And then the ellipses, the colored ellipses, is the area that is covered by different admixed individuals, but again, just looking at indigenous fractions of them. So clear here, the message is that there are like some places that have no overlapping profiles. For example, between Mesoamerica, which is the green area here, we can see in this ellipse, there's no, this is the reference, the indigenous reference, there's no overlapping space with the indigenous fraction of admixed individuals living, for example, in Colombia, Peru, and the Andes. Colombia here, for example, has an area that is more or less, you know, making sense closer to these, you know, Amazonian references, and the Peruvian individuals have a closer relationship with Andean. So that makes sense in terms of geography. But again, this just tells us how diverse is the origin within the indigenous fractions of Latin Americans, and even with non-overlapping profiles, gives really a scientific motivation for doing more diverse studies around the world, as has been previously you know, stated here with this very known graph where the majority of individuals participating in genomic studies so far are of European descent. So having a very big disproportion of the amount of people living in the planet and how many of those are represented really in genomic profiles. So, in this scenario, is really very important the role that biobanks or large-scale genomics studies can play, and that's why several years ago we initiated a project that we call the Mexican Biobank Project. I had the privilege to lead and was published a couple of years ago, where we can have a finer picture of what is the genetic profile in the country. And we have several other medical implications in the paper, which you can check here. But today I'm going to focus more in what is the you know, lessons we learn about the origins and the structure of the population. So here. The beautiful thing about a biobank or a nationwide biobank is you can have a profile of the different ancestries across the different regions within the country, state by state. This biobank has data from every single state across the country, and we can tell by not only the usual three-way admixture profile as these three sources that I just mentioned, but we can also discover other ancestries that have contributed to the diversity seen today but have been usually neglected. I'm going to give just one quick example, which is East Asian ancestry. So East Asian ancestry here, as we can clearly see in the first map, is mostly concentrating in one state here in the Pacific Coast, which is Guerrero. And if we look at the, you know, karyogram here, looking at the segments of each of the ancestries, East Asian is in red. And we can also see different lengths of these segments, which will be important in the next analysis. And here we show just basically a clear genetic affinity connection with East Asian ancestry, just confirming that it's actually from East Asia. But where in East Asia? And that's where the ancestry-specific analysis come from. We take only those red segments, which is of East Asian ancestry, and we then project them on a much you know, richer panel of East Asian ancestries, which are in this map. So either Japan, China, Philippines, Indonesia, and so on. So surprisingly here, in this ASPC of East Asian ancestry, you can see that individuals from Mexico, most of them closer with samples from Indonesia, Borneo, and the Philippines. Surprisingly, because maybe one would think, you know, most common East Asian ancestry would be Japan or China. So when we look at this in terms of why this is coming from the Philippines, well, there was actually a boat called the Manila Galleon that was departing from Manila, and guess what? It was disembarking in Acapulco, which is in the state of Guerrero, where we are finding this East Asian ancestry. Now, the length of the segments, as introduced by Janet in this first talk today, is important because you can see that longer segments reflect more recent ancestors, and shorter are more ancient ones. And we were able to date the introduction of this, or the mixture of these East Asian segments, into the Mexican population. Turns out that it was 13 generations ago, so roughly 400 years ago. And then we contrast with, there's no historical records as in the Atlantic side of the transatlantic slave trade, but in the Trans-Pacific, we found an indirect evidence of the amount of silver coins traded between the Manila Galleon and Mexico, and the peak of this trade coincides with the 13th generation's genetic estimate. So this was covered in this little piece of science. One of my master's students did the work, and in the context of how these rich reference panels can illuminate basically hidden stories of ancestries in Mexico. Other things that we can do with the biobank dataset that has nationwide coverage is actually to infer the genetic origin of human remains or people that have unknown origins in terms of genetics in Mexico. And this is obviously more challenging because of the temperate environments where these DNA samples come from. Despite that, we have been able to recover some of the DNA in the central Mexican archaeological site. This is the work by Daniela Orozco, one of my PhD students. and reveal two things. So one is the internal relationships of, you know, which individuals are related to which within the boreals. And we found, interestingly, one mother-son pair. And interestingly, using biobank and other data sets, we were able to see that this the son of this pair has both affinities with southern Mexico and very far northern states, such as Sonora. So basically here, you know, across the border. So where we tend to think that these sites or burials are mostly local and that people were not moving, actually, like Johannes said, that people have been moving around like all, you know, all the time throughout evolution. So just an example of how fine scale this can get with reference panels nationwide. So speaking of long distance connections, I'm just gonna quickly move back to this same map that we saw several times, but just now focus on this green shaded area, because one of the long-standing questions about the origins of the indigenous people, both in the Americas and the Pacific, was whether they were connected prehistorically or not. Other evidences that have nothing to do with genetics already point out towards the possible contact, because there's evidence of plants that are native of from the Americas, such as the sweet potato, that has been found in the archaeological record in Pacific Islands way before European presence there. So we started this project with one particular island, which is part of Chile today. This was, you know, an extension of our current collaborations in Latin America, because currently Easter Island is part of Chile. But it's equally complex in the sense that has also a lot of degrees of admixture. So initial waves of migration through Polynesian settlers that come all the way from Taiwan, this Austronesian expansion that happened 4,000 to 5,000 years ago. But then after European contact, there's of course European genes coming in. And since it's part of Chile today, there's also indigenous genes coming in. So this was a very complex question to answer. And the way we did it is actually not to limit in terms of having samples from Easter Island, but also from many other Polynesian and Pacific Islanders and the Americas to have basically like a trans-Pacific data set to answer this question. First result was to confirm that indeed there's a lot of mixture in the islands. So you can see here mostly Polynesian ancestry here in blue. So this pie chart just gives you the average of each of the ancestries. Unexpectedly, we had a lot of European ancestry in many of the islands, mostly the French Polynesian islands, because of course they were colonized by Europeans. And here, this bigger node is Easter Island. We have more samples from that island. Interestingly, what we saw is that we also have this pink portion of the pie chart, which comes from the indigenous origin. Again, maybe it was not surprising because, as I said, these may be Chileans that just moved to the island recently, and they also come from this pre-mixture composition of any other Latin American population. But the question was whether we can tease apart when this happened. So this plot, which is an admixture plot that tells you just the proportion in a vertical line of each individual, how they are composed in terms of ancestry. And just very clearly, we can see here, again, most of the Polynesian islanders having this blue component. But on the other side, we have individuals from different countries in Latin America and indigenous as well, at least distinguishing two major components in terms of the indigenous origins. So one is the one that we call here Central Native American in green and Southern Native American in yellow. So let me just zoom in here. And the red one is European admixture, as you can see here from the references. Let me just zoom in the Polynesian islands that have this indigenous component. And I want to just bring to your attention that we found these two components in different proportions. In general, Polynesian islanders that have this southern component, which is in yellow, have a correlation with the European ancestry. Most likely this is coming together with recent migrants into the islands. However, the green one, you can see that is more stable over islands and over time. There are different samplings here, 94 and 2013, the one that we did together. And this tells us that most likely this is more ancient. So the other thing that we can test to confirm that whether this is ancient or not is look at the length and the segregation pattern within the chromosomes and the genome. So one interesting thing that we found in this individual, despite having a lot of European ancestry, half of the genome is of European ancestry here in red. The other half, if you can see, it's mostly Polynesian, but it has indigenous segments in green, always segregating together in correlation. So there's no red blocks of European ancestry with Polynesian. So most likely this was actually introduced in the population longer time ago. So next, what we can do is to take again this ancestry-specific approach, taking only those little indigenous fractions of the Polynesian islanders and then project it on top of a big reference panel from across Latin America. So here what we can see is that most of the indigenous fractions of Polynesians clustered with the northern indigenous groups. and not the southern. Why am I highlighting this? Because most likely one would think that the southern Chileans or something would be the best candidate to have introduced those segments because it's like a straight line across the Pacific, right? However, we saw that this is kind of an unusual pattern. Let me just, you know, flip this PCA and make it prettier in terms of just the distribution of the references, which are here in different colors, and then just one dot for the average of each island. Instead of each individual, each dot is just the average of the whole island. And as you can see here, that again, most of them cluster with these references that are like from coastal Colombia, from northern Peru, and a little bit of overlap also with the distribution of southern Mexico. But surprisingly, not with these indigenous groups from Chile, which would be like Pehuenche, Huilliche, and so on. Except this is a subset of the samples from Easter Island, but it says here, the little label, I don't know if you can read here, but it says high European ancestry. So those individuals that have a lot of European, their indigenous portion of the genome is actually coming from Chile. So again, it's reinforcing the idea that this is really a different wave of migration. To confirm that this is separate in time, we use this other technique that we already mentioned, that the length of these segments can be informative of when they were introduced. And the model that basically taking into account the decay of how fast this should decay if there was, you know, a contact in a given time in the past, we can have an estimate of around between 20 and 24 generations ago that Polynesians and Native Americans mixed. This is one example for the Easter Island individuals. But in the map, just going back to the same figure, you can see here the date of the other islands that also have indigenous fraction, and all of them point towards, you know, roughly the 1200s. That's CE, basically 800 years ago. If you take into account that this was at least five centuries before Europeans were sniffing around in the region, and this is basically to demonstrate that intercontinental exchanges or migrations were happening even way before Christopher Columbus claimed that to be the first sailor to cross the ocean. Well, I think someone else did it before, all right? So again, this approach was basically from present day people towards the past. And this is a very powerful approach because we have more samples than going from the Asian DNA approach. However, another study recently also did the reverse way, which is taking DNA from human remains from Rapa Nui, Easter Island, and confirmed that actually there is a signal of indigenous mixture that dates before European contact. And I think this is, contributed to the growing evidence that there was actually prehistorical contact between indigenous Americans and Polynesians. And I think this is also important in terms of how the field had been evolving, because before, one of the first ancient DNA studies was claiming that there was not evidence for that. And one thing that I want to point out is that what we cannot infer from the genetic data is the way or the dynamics in which this contact occurred. It could have been Polynesians going all the way to the Americas, come back with some mixed signal, and then continue the colonizing the rest of the islands, or even just, you know, an indigenous group of people that made it all the way to the Pacific, and then they mixed together somewhere, maybe in the Tuamotu's archipelago. So just to finalize with that, I would like just to highlight how this was possible thanks to not only the researchers and co-authors, but mostly about the participants of the community, and that this project really involved a lot of community engagement from the time we're there in the community to propose and invite people to participate. Even before publishing the paper, we were going back to the community and give back results, individual reports of, you know, what is their genetic profile. There was a lot of pride to know that they have Polynesian genes still present in their DNA. We gave conferences there in the island even before. By the time the paper was published, it was already the pandemic, so we couldn't do it in person. But then after, like basically 2003, like a couple of years ago, we were able to go back, and there was even interest from some producers in the UK to film a documentary. So we took the opportunity to give back some more results, and the documentary is already available here in the US. I think it's through Nova PBS. In the UK, it's through BBC. In Japan and France, there's other distributors. And if you have a chance, watch it. It's worth it. And thank you very much.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.